On Pilot TV this week, we are heading off to Dublin for Marion Keyes' adaptation, The Walsh Sisters, on BBC One, getting all hot under the collar for the return of The Night Agent on Netflix, and discovering that it is always good to check the embargoes before deciding what shows you're going to review. Word to the wise. Plus, Lisa McGee and Sinead Keenan drop by to tell us how to get to heaven from Belfast. I'm James Dyer, and welcome to Pilot TV, your essential guide to every show that matters. And joining me this week in the cockpit of the Good Ship Pilot, as we attempt to chart the increasingly murky and embargo-infested waters of Peak TV, are my two co-pilots. Fresh from his jolly to Santa Monica, and now firmly in the pocket of Big Apple, it is Boyd Hilton.
Hello. Is this my first show since I came back from
LA? Well, you did a pilot plus.
I did a pilot plus,
yes. But
yeah.
Basically, okay. Yes.
Yeah, it's all a blur.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Indeed. Okay. And returning triumphant to the regular pod this week, having clearly moonlighted with a number of other podcasts in the interim, it is Kay Ribeiro. Hello, Kay.
Hello, James Dyer.
Welcome back.
Thank you. Thank you for your warm greeting.
You're very welcome. And also, you know, it's nice to have you back snuffling croissants in the studio, as you have been doing.
Off camera.
I can tell because there's bits of croissant actually still visible on your software. So anyone looking on the cameras can see.
Sorry. I did it off camera because I know it offends some people's eyes.
It does.
Listen, I walked into the studio and James has delivered the best news ever.
Yeah.
Which is that we are streamlining the pod.
Yes.
We're becoming more succinct. And he has vowed not to talk about The West Wing or Star Trek in order to help do that.
Literally none of
what
those things
news.
Are true. However, I am going to try and keep us on track and more concise.
He's keeping his bullshit to a minimum. That's how I'm summarizing
Even
it.
Even though the most successful podcasts in the world are generally like 3 hours long.
Why would you say that? Don't give him a green card.
I'm just saying factually. We had this discussion yesterday off air.
Boyd, he thinks we should be longer, if anything.
Yeah, if anything,
5-6 hours per podcast.
They go on for 2.5 hours.
That's not good either.
Every week.
Are you looking at the drop-off rate, crucially?
Of Empire, no,
of the listeners. I mean, that's what we need to study. But anyway,
yeah, Kay's all about the data.
apparently so. Who
that's
knew?
What the they also say.
But look, there's something very exciting we have to share. But it's only going to work for a certain demographic of our listeners.
Go on.
And that is for those of you watching at the moment on YouTube. You will notice something very exciting, and that is the logo behind me. Works! For the first time it works!
Is it the first time?
It is the first time.
It's always there.
No, it's not. This is the thing. If
Apparently
you go
not.
Back, it has never, ever worked before. Wow. We've only ever had... So these ones on the side, so the one behind UK, which is like a strip, that has been the one that's appeared behind me in a little bar behind me at all times. And I have been trying for months to get it to fill this screen. I will not bore you with the technical details. I have no idea why it wasn't working. But miraculously, look at it! It's glorious!
It is quite a big digital screen.
It's a massive screen.
It's like our own volume.
It is. I am on my own LED volume.
I think we should look at our definition of exciting.
I'm pretty excited.
I mean, look, it looks nice. I don't know if it's the most exciting thing that's going to happen on this podcast. Yeah. I hope not, at least.
Yeah, it's like I'm surrounded by yellow. It really brings out the blue in my eyes, doesn't it?
They are blue. Before we go on, can we just send Steph Celan our best wishes? Because one of the reasons why I'm here, other than, you know, I'm job sharing with her, is that she's had an operation now. Rumour on the street is that she's elected to have perfectly healthy tonsils removed to get a break from you guys.
That is true.
Can you confirm or deny?
We can confirm this.
Yeah.
She did send us a picture of herself from her sick bed, ripped to the tits on painkillers. Yeah. Which I've obviously added to the Pilot TV Instagram. no, I haven't, Steph, don't worry. She is alive and well.
We wish her well in her recovery.
Do.
Eat loads of ice cream, get better soon, come back.
Yes. Come back, Steph.
Apparently she's got an ice cream maker, I was told.
Really?
Yeah.
What, in her hotel room?
No. It's not a hotel.
Yeah. I
thought it was you,
boy.
If you had your tonsils out, it would be in a hotel.
Yeah, definitely.
No.
Yeah.
Shay Steph, I believe, she has a
She's so bougie. That doesn't surprise me.
But this may already be going off track.
It is in the new fascist regime.
I'm sorry.
That's it.
Yeah,
on topic. Yeah. Right, let's move on to what we've been watching. Kay, what have you been watching?
Okay, I'll rattle through.
Give us it in a tight 20.
No,
seconds.
I'm always tight with what I've been watching. It's you guys. Right,
and go.
Winter Olympics. Currently obsessed, can't get enough of it, don't understand the majority of what I'm watching, which is always true of group sports that I get into, but particularly the Winter Olympics is befuddling my brain because the point scoring system.
We also haven't got a medal yet.
I know. Right.
As at time of speaking anyway, which is Thursday, 12th of February, 12:23 p.m., we have not won a single solitary medal. carry on.
Still exciting to watch. Though.
Yeah,
We've
no, I love
efforts.
It as well. Yeah.
Good efforts. Okay, watch the full series of Shrinking, which I believe is dropping weekly, isn't it?
Oh, obsessed.
Series 3. No, I'm not going to bang on, but I just want to say I did love the whole series. It completely delivered for me. I am concerned about there being a series 4, though. Because
why?
I think it's wrapped up so nicely.
Oh, you're saying they shouldn't bother with Series 4, which has already been
announced. That's what I'm saying. As a hardcore fan, I'm worried.
Wow.
Because it would have been a perfect place to end, but... as always, you know, I will accept and love future
That's
series.
That's good of you. Yeah. Harrison Ford will be relieved.
If he's in it. ... Also loving and have finished Under the Salt Marsh on Sky Atlantic, which I know you reviewed.
Under Salt
there's
Marsh.
There's no
Under
Come
Salt
on,
Marsh.
Mm.
Absolutely.
Yes. There's more than one Salt Marsh. You don't need the definite article. Yeah.
Well, for me, it's the only one because it is great. I loved it. I thought Kelly Riley and Rafe Spall were the duo I didn't know I needed. Mm. They're great.
Yeah, they're good. Brilliant, yeah.
And then the last thing I watched, and absolutely no bitterness in my voice when I say this, I watched the first episode of Series 2 of The Last Thing He Told Me, because the last thing James Dyer told me was I needed to watch it.
Mm.
It's on Apple, and we were going to review it, apparently, according to James,
yes.
Until we realised it was embargoed. So all I'm saying to you guys is, if you like the first series, do check it out. It's on the 20th of Feb on Apple, and it's the drama with Jennifer Garner and Nikolai Coster-Waldau. And did
well
I,
done.
And did I practice that several times watching YouTube before I came here? Yes, I did.
Did you watch my interview with him on YouTube at the BFI for the series that he did recently?
No, I didn't.
Which was, Boydie?
The one with James Norton, the historical William the Conqueror thing. What was it called?
Oh, yes.
King and Conqueror?
Sure.
King and Conqueror?
Yeah, King and Conqueror.
I think so. Anyway, he was a lovely guy, yeah. And I had to pronounce his name in front of, you know, 400 people.
Oh, my gosh. You
people.
Know, I would fall at that hurdle.
It was quite stressful, yeah.
I've had to write it out phonetically on my
page. But I think you're right. I think Nikolai Coster-Waldau is right, yeah.
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 It is, because I watched him say it.
Yeah, there you go.
Anyway, what have you been watching, Boydo?
Oh, thanks for asking. I have watched more of Small Profits, which we reviewed last week.
We did.
With
I've
Mackenzie
been hearing
Crooks.
Such good things about this.
Yeah, Mackenzie Crooks' new very quirky comedy, which has got, among other people in it, John Poynting, who's very funny, Sophie Willen, they're a couple. They're really, really brilliant. All their scenes are fantastic. They're neighbours of this eccentric guy who thinks he can wake homunculi little creatures who tell the future. It's got a really weird premise, as we discussed. But as it unfolds, it's so skillfully, tonally put together that you kind of go along with the whole eccentric madness of it. And James is taking his headphones off, storming off in
fury. The angle of the camera is not good enough on him,
because,
so he's now...
Oh, because apparently, you can't see me on camera. Well, no one needs to see me on camera. It's
usually
fine.
He wants a ring light.
Talking,
he wants...
Okay, yeah, so...
why do you... explain. So you're saying tonally it makes it... okay.
Yeah, because it kind of, he establishes this tone where of realism, you know, like the scenes of the main guy in the DIY shop are all, you know, they're kind of funny and real, and Mackenzie Crooks is annoying boss, etc. And then when it comes to like the fantastical elements, you're like, oh, okay, yeah, this is just part of
just
the tissue of the show, mm-hmm. if you like, the DNA of the show. But it's really well written. It's beautifully done, and just kind of achieving that the right kind of tone throughout the
I
whole
wanna
thing.
I want to watch it. Is it all on iPlayer?
Monday nights. I think it's all on iPlayer. Monday nights, BBC 2,
mm-hmm.
10 p.m. I believe. And I've had quite a few people come out to me saying, "Oh, that is a really brilliant show."
Yeah, I've seen people everyone's raving about it.
Yeah, online. It's great. I'm going to mention industry again. I'm mentioning industry almost as often as you mention
Shrinking,
and that he mentions Star Trek.
Mm-hmm.
Because it is absolutely fantastic. And I've had a few people message me saying, why aren't more people talking about industry? Well, we'll talk about it clearly, relentlessly. And I think the fourth episode went out last week, and the fifth one will be going out tonight if you listen to this Monday as soon as it arrives, listeners, which is incredible in itself. But the fourth episode is one of the episodes of the year. I know we're only in February.
Claimed by Boyd Hilton.
But I'm going to say it will be in there. And when we do our annual roundup of our favourite stuff of the year, episode 4 of industry, this season of industry, will be up there for best episodes of the year, because the whole ending with Rishi, who's been through a huge amount without spoiling anything in the previous series, ends up on this cocaine-fueled binge of nightmare binge with the journalist character played by the dude from Stranger Things, Charlie Heaton, thank you. Is the two of them, and they have play 80s music, including Ultravox's Vienna. You know Vienna by Ultravox?
Can you sing it?
I was about to, and then I thought, no, I can't. This means nothing to me. Vienna is how the chorus goes. This means nothing to me. Like that. Okay. There we go. I did sing it.
Oh yeah, but I get it.
And it's that cranked up to 11. These two and this snorting piles of cocaine, Scarface style piles of cocaine.
This is Boyd's Weekend.
And yeah, exactly. And going bonkers, and it ends in a really quite distressing manner, like just what ends up happening at the end of the episode. But it's so brilliantly directed and put together that it's astonishing. It's a bit like a Safdie Brothers film. If you see, it's a film reference, but there you go. Uncut Gems. It's a bit Uncut Gems-esque. If you've seen,
Kate's like, sure, why not?
Absolutely.
Kate, rent it at the weekend. Adam Sandler, fine. Uncut Gems. You might regret it because it is grueling. It's a grueling visual viewing experience, is mm-hmm. what I'm saying. But absolutely justified in its kind of almost excruciating level of hyped up madness.
And accuracy? Does it feel authentic?
I think I personally have never taken cocaine. I'm proud mm-hmm. to say, but I know
he's
people
going on
have.
The record to say
I
that.
Know people have. It's a brilliant, brilliant episode. Episode 4, and it carries on being brilliant and amazing as it goes on. And I will be discussing it weekly. Mm-hmm. We should definitely do a spoiler special on it, by the way, because there's so much to discuss by the time it finishes, I think, yeah. Anyway, and the other thing I wanted to mention is the Graham Norton show, right, I've said this before, that...
You're going to talk about Taylor Swift's Oprah-like music video. I thought you would be going this way.
No, he's in it, isn't he? Yeah,
he is in
Taylor Swift's video, which is amazing.
We should mention this, because this is TV adjacent, as yeah? it's connected yeah, yeah. to it, because she appeared on the Graham Norton yes. show when Life of a Showgirl came out, and the other guests on there were Cillian Murphy, Donald Gleeson, Jodie Turner-Smith, Greta Lee,
yep.
and she thought... And at one point, they're mocking Donald Gleeson's dancing,
yep.
and he said, oh, it's because I want to be in
a...
I want to be in a... Please, no, I'm not doing the voice. He said, "Oh, I'm just waiting to be invited to be in a Taylor Swift music video." And she gets a look on her face, and lo and behold, the Opalite music video. She filmed it here in the UK, and all of them are in it.
Yeah, I love that.
Do you know
fucking
what?
Fucking fair play.
I'm not generally a fan, but yeah. I think that's brilliant.
It is yeah. fantastic.
Good
and,
touch.
And that's not even why I brought it up. But obviously, there is that connection. You, of course, should have been in it as well, because that was the same week that you waved at her with your.
That is true. I'm yeah. slightly yeah. disappointed yeah, yeah, not to yeah, have
well,
been
you
invited.
Break yeah. the restraining order.
Yes. Mm. Yeah. So I should be in the video as well.
You should be in the video.
And
as well.
Yet, I'm not.
We'll Photoshop.
Or maybe I am. Maybe I mean people just haven't.
Darren, can you Photoshop that in there? I feel like it's the kind of thing he'll be able to do.
AI can sort that out. Yeah.
Exactly.
Yeah, yeah.
James' best friend.
Crank up your chat. Anyway, I wasn't even talking about the Taylor Swift. I was talking about last Friday's. It'll be the Friday before last as this goes out, because there's another episode tomorrow, Friday, recording this today, Thursday. Anyway, last week's episode was with Margot Robbie and Jacob Elordi talking about Wuthering Heights.
Mm-hmm.
Amanda Seyfried, who's talking about her new thing, whatever it was. I can't even remember.
Did you call her Amanda Seyfried?
Seyfried. Anyway, yeah. Amanda.
We haven't got time for it.
She's in.
Just pick one.
Amanda S. from yeah. the Mamma Mia films.
Yes.
She goes by Minji on social media. Maybe you should just call her.
Oh, there you go. Steady. That's up to her. That's between,
yeah,
that's between her and her fans.
Don't go down that cancellation
no.
route.
And Johannes Radebeek, who only Kay among the YouTube world will know who that is. He's a Strictly dancer. And he's in the musical of some kind of musical coming up on stage.
Kinky Boots.
Thank you.
Details, Boyd. Details.
Details. Anyway, that was the lineup, right? But why would to say was the Graham Norton show, people love it, and I think the reason people love it is because he brings all the guests out at the same time and they kind of bond with each other from the start. Now, and basically he's kind of most of the time the format, it's not exactly genius format, because he just cranks up the anecdotes, you know. He basically has a lovely chat with them all, and when he gets to them promoting their stuff, he will come, you know, he will queue up anecdotes.
Yeah,
so clearly been
researchers have done a great job.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. But I have to say, the simple notion of having all the guests arriving at the same time and him letting them bond with each other, sometimes without even necessarily interfering that much, works. Sometimes it works so brilliantly. And this episode, I thought, was one of the best ever, mainly because Amanda Seyfried was so, I think she was borderline tipsy. I'm not.
Well, they often are.
Well, they do ply them with wine and champagne. So she was glugging no white wine, pretty much. And she was so funny and kind of like freewheeling that she kind of managed to bring, you'd think J.K. Elordi a little bit, not standoffish, but you know, he's a kind of cool young dude,
straight
right?
guy.
Yeah, and she by the end of this episode, they're singing ABBA songs.
No way.
Yes, it was like wild. And Margot Robbie was really funny anyway. She's always kind of entertaining, good chat show guest. And Johannes read a bit. And they were kind of like loving the clips of his stuff. He posted a really funny clip of someone trying to say his name properly and getting it wrong all the time. It was just a really brilliant...
I might check it out.
Yeah,
it'll be on iPlayer,
check it out.
Right?
You'll love it, yeah. Of course, it's on iPlayer, yeah. But I thought it was a really great example of that show working at its peak, absolute peak, Graham Norton. Mm-hmm. Show, but I guess I mainly down to Amanda Seyfried. However, you pronounce her fucking name.
Wow,
sorry.
I should say I completely. I just threw shade at Lewis Capaldi because he's also in the Taylor Swift music video because he was also on that.
Do you know
week.
What that
so
shows
apologies
us?
To Lewis Capaldi.
Very good of you to apologise.
Yeah.
But what it really shows us is that during Boyd's elongated anecdote, then James had just been thinking about the Taylor Swift video and who he's gone to mention.
I'm always partly thinking about the Taylor Swift music video, but in this particular case, I applaud this because I think Graham Norton is great. I really do think
he's genius at doing at facilitating the freewheeling nature of the show.
Yeah.
Especially, completely.
I watched one the other day just briefly, which I thought was really good, which had Kim Kardashian, Sarah Paulson, and I think Bryan Cranston. It was very, very good because sometimes I think it can be a bit like, oh, the researchers have done their job. He literally is just teeing up anecdotes. But Graham is so funny. Mm. He's able to draw
out.
It's
the other stuff. It's the other stuff. And sometimes they go on for so long with just the general bonding and fun bits that they don't have to queue up the anecdotes.
Yeah.
That's what I think.
And sometimes
really
they don't even have time for the red chair, which is,
Yeah, they did. Actually, funny enough, the red chair was really funny as well in that episode. So, yeah, warmly, highly recommend.
Well, we're already hitting the 30-minute mark now.
Right. And I'm sure that's all we've got time for in this Rich Pilot TV podcast because Boyd has run us out of time.
I loved every second.
Yeah, you turncoat.
Well, I'm going to keep
at
this
least
really
it was
quick.
Relevant to what's going on TV right now, rather than some show that was last on 30 fucking years ago.
Yeah, well done, Boyd.
Am I not allowed to talk about Broadchurch again? It's fine. I've not watched any more of it. So, what have I watched? I finished Waiting for the Out, which is very, very good. I watched The Last Thing He Told Me because I thought we were reviewing
it. We've all watched that.
We can't talk about it, but it's okay because Jennifer Garner's going to be on this show next week and she's going to tell us about it.
Yes.
So you can just wait and hear it from Jennifer Garner and I'm sure she'll be much better talking about it than, we will.
Yeah.
So that's fine.
Excited for that.
Yeah, I'll be interviewing her, Kay, because James can't be bothered. He's too lazy to get involved.
That's broadly speaking the truth.
I think it's because you'll get tongue-tied. I think you're better in this scenario.
We'll see.
I once flew out to LA just to interview Jennifer Garner and then flew immediately back again.
Oh, right. Did you have an invite, though?
Yeah, I didn't just turn up at a house.
You should be reconnecting with her. Well, you should totally be doing this thing. I can't believe you're not. What's your excuse?
I'm not going to be here.
Yeah.
Sorry.
Oh, God.
He's taken a day off to dedicate to watching some Taylor Swift YouTube videos.
That's basically it, yes.
Taylor Swift day is
the other thing I've been watching, which some of us, in fact, maybe all of us have been watching, is How to Get to Heaven from Belfast, which we're going to hear about very, very shortly.
It's a good week for brilliant Irish shows, I have to
Isn't
say.
Isn't it? Yeah. Yes. Spoiler for the review section.
They may not be brilliant.
They may be very average.
You'd be
it's really hard
not
to say.
I think so, but yeah.
But How to Get to Heaven from Belfast, I have watched, I think, 7 of the 8 episodes now. Because we reviewed it on last week's Pilot Plus. And it's great. I'm really, really enjoying it. It's kind of that wacky blend, as we discussed, of, comedy first and then drama. And it gets absolutely batty as it goes on. Yeah. Especially when Saoirse Monica Jackson from Derry Girls turns up.
What a really endorsement, though, that James is really on board with it, considering the ratio as discussed at length and plus.
It's comedy
heavy. And it's got
comedy leaning.
It's quite tonal shifty as well for you.
And it's a bit silly at times.
It's very,
he's pulling the silly face.
Yeah, oh my God.
But it's good.
Yeah,
but it's good.
It just shows you when it's this well written and put together and directed and acted, it will conquer even the bitter, twisted psyche of James.
But also I sometimes think it's, yes, all of this is true, but I think there's something specific about this very specific Northern Irish sense of humour that she imbues the show with. It is quite dry and it tickles me. Like, it's very my sense of humour, so I find that really funny. Also, the plot, which is wild, by the way, every episode pretty much ends on a cliffhanger. You have no fucking clue where this show is going. Like, I'm right at the very end. I still don't know where it's going.
Yeah, yeah.
I've
seen Lisa McGee describe it apparently as a shit A-team. I think that's it's great.
That's how I describe us, Kay.
No, I mean, that is true. And I wouldn't call us A-team. We were very much
a shit B-team.
Like,
okay.
Not even
that's
B.
Fair.
And you know, when I posed the question, you'll hear this in the interview, in this very episode, if I ever get it to James, by the way, sorry about that. Anyway, you'll hear that, you remember in the last, when we reviewed, I conjectured that the character, the screenwriter, the brilliantly, brilliantly successful screenwriter,
was based on Lisa's experiences.
Her experiences, yeah. And she completely confirmed, she's absolutely 100%, yeah.
Of course.
Her venting from what she's dealt with when she became really well known and famous.
And hopefully,
and award winning.
Boyd will reveal those names to James and me.
Yeah, yeah, there you go. That would be good.
Yeah.
Well, do you know what? While we're talking about it, shall we tee up your interview with Sinead Keenan and Lisa McGee? We have just been talking
so
about
smooth.
It, but it is about a bunch of friends who are reunited at a funeral of an old school friend who may or may not be dead. A load of stuff comes up from the past. There's a Dolly Parton impersonating hit woman. There's all sorts of stuff going on here. It is batshit. It is brilliant. Sinead Keenan plays Robin, and she is hilarious because she is very much a woman on the edge of a nervous breakdown. And it's a load of fun. And they spoke to Boydie all about the fun they had. And give us, encapsulate the entire interview for us in one sentence.
Oh, they are having a great time.
because they're with you.
No, with each other and making the show.
So despite you being there.
In spite of me, they had a fabulous time.
Okay.
All round. So making the show, doing the podcast, chatting to each other, etc. Yes. Sinead Keenan is, of course, in the middle of filming the new season of Unforgotten.
Yes.
Ooh. And she took a break. She took a break so she could.
A break for you.
A break for me.
A break for Boydie.
Yeah, there you go.
Here is Boydie talking to Lisa McGee and Sinead Keenan.
So, welcome to Lisa McGee and Sinead Keenan to the Pilot TV podcast. How are you both doing?
Good.
Yeah. Thank you.
Good.
Lovely to see you. Congratulations on How to Get to Heaven from Belfast. Lisa, this is an epic production, right? I mean, you've got everything in it. You've got, like, it's a whodunit murder, thriller, mystery. You've got extreme weather conditions. You've got car crashes. You've got everything. Did you want to go big? Like, was this your kind of thing? Like, you know, you had Derry Girls, huge success. Now is my time to go big.
Yeah. I wanted to do a sort of... we did kind of throw everything at it in a way because they were letting us do it, and we just thought, let's do everything we've ever wanted to do. So I like the idea of doing a kind of epic road trip. I think of them a bit like a bad female A-team that make everything worse wherever they go. And yeah, it was just great to do. And also, like, the story is about twisty turny, and I wanted them to physically be on a twisty turny journey as well. Do you know why all that was happening? So it was great to get a chance to do so much of all that genre stuff as well.
And of course, Sinead, you two go way back, right? Like London Irish, I remember, on Channel 4. What is it about Lisa's stuff that kind of is makes it so enticing for an actor?
It's very good. Simply put, it's very good.
Yeah.
No, we first worked together on Being Human. Actually, Lisa wrote. Was it one or two of those, Lisa?
I wrote three Being Humans. I think it was three. So I came in. Probably series two.
Yeah.
When you were a werewolf.
Yes. Yes.
With Russell Tovey, of course.
Yes. Yes. Back in those hairy days. And then we had London Irish, which was, my God, I distinctly remember getting that script. And from the first page, I was reading it in my flat on my own. You know, you get comedy scripts and you'd kind of go, oh, yeah, that's funny. Yeah, that could work. That could work. And you kind of go, yeah, that could work maybe if they do this, and depends how that they film it. Just laugh out loud funny from the get-go. There's no let-up. And that was London Irish. And the same with obviously the world saw it, Derry Girls, the same thing. And it's the exact same with this script. The characters are so recognisable and so well-defined, so different yet very similar. You never knowingly say no to a Lisa script.
No. And Lisa, I love the way you introduce your three main characters at the start with that. They each get a kind of their own little sequence, don't they?
Yes.
And Sinead's with the three kids in the back, it's just so hilarious and kind of scary and everything. That is a fantastic opening scene. Did you always have that in mind as Sinead's first scene in the show?
I think I'm a mom of two boys, and I think I've been there definitely, you know, and I have a lot of friends sincere mums now, and just that kind of those frustrations and that anger rising up in you, but that you can't ever show. Do you know, like, it was a lot of fun to write that. So, and I really like that Sinead's character, Robin, is an outwardly very glamorous, put together, polished woman. But inside, she's just a ball of rage that's just ready to explode. You know, it was great fun writing that, and I really wanted to write something that a lot of mums might identify with.
I think they would. Sinead, how was that to film, that scene?
Oh yeah, well, I am also the mother of two boys, so I absolutely I have screamed in my car. I can tell you, I haven't quite broken skin. I haven't bled.
No.
Like that, but good. I have certainly raised the voices have been raised.
Yeah, I bet. It strikes me there's such a mix of genres, isn't it? You've got the mystery thriller with the comedy. It's relentlessly funny, and yet the story, you really want to know what happens. How did you find that, mixing those genres and coming up with a story that's funny yet, you know, enticing and suspenseful as well?
I think if I'm being really honest, I always wanted to have a crack at a mystery, and I love mystery. I love you know, Murder, She Wrote, Columbo, all those old TV shows. I think, you know, they're incredibly hard to write. Do you know, I think people don't give them enough credit, and those writers were doing it week after week and starting at zero and going again. It's just I'm so impressed by the writers of those shows. But so I knew I needed to do this my way. I knew I if I was going to do it, it needed to be funny. Hopefully it needed to be, you know, ensemble, because I'm better when I have a group of characters who can talk to each other. And I needed it to be very Irish and chaotic. So it was my way of being able to sort of do, you know, have it's a dream job for me, being able to write a mystery, but this is how I kind of had to do it so it would work in my tone, if that makes sense.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. How did you embrace the chaotic tone, Sinead? Is it it looks like great fun to film. I mean, it's great fun to watch. Was it as much fun to actually film?
It genuinely was. It was hard work. It was a long slog. It was, I think all in all, it was about 6 months.
Wow.
Filming, you know, Belfast, Derry, Donegal, Dublin, Malta, London, all over. Like, we covered it all. But there was one day out of those 125 where I didn't laugh out loud on set.
Wow.
But yeah, it was great fun. It was great. Like, Lisa,
why didn't you laugh on that day?
That day, I'll tell you exactly when that day was. It was the first scene. Everything was sort of out of order because sometimes we'd just stop for weather and blah, blah, blah. It was when we were picking up Roisin's character, Saoirse, from the airport. Like the first scene, we see the three of them together. And it was raining. The rain was coming down sideways. I think you were on set that day, Lisa.
You keep saying you were in a bad mood that day, but you didn't seem. I was outside in a tent, and you seemed fine. Like, I was in such a bad mood because I was outside and it was pissing down and it was miserable. But you know, the scene's great. So
that was the day. That was my pit of despair.
Okay.
That day.
Yeah. You're all allowed one pit of despair day, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. That has to be part of the deal. Now, I'm fascinated by the character, by Roisin's character, Saoirse, because she's a highly successful TV writer, right? Now, I think we're in the company of one of those. How much, it struck me that you're working out a lot of the experience you must have had as an award-winning creator of a brilliant show that you then transplanted onto this character who gets to do fantastic stuff. Her scenes are hilarious. The BAFTA scene, etc. You must have experienced all that. I feel like you're venting to some.
Oh, I definitely was venting to the point where, like, you know, the execs, Leslie and Caroline Letta, who did Derry Girls, who did London Irish, I've worked with for years, were like, maybe we should cut some of this because is it a diary or just, you know. But it was so much fun getting to write all that and getting to say things that I'm not brave enough to say in real life. It's not the real situation. I just imagine if you were a writer that had a success with a TV show that you started to hate, that and you couldn't stop writing because it was too successful, and how that would feel. And I thought that was a very interesting way in, because I very much understood Saoirse's career frustration. So it was a way under that character, and actually a way under that to the show for me was Three Saoirse and Who Your Friends Might Be then. And yeah, but it was a lot of fun doing those BAFTA scenes.
Oh, I bet. Yeah, I bet. And it strikes as being incredibly meta, because then you've got the show within the show, that series, it stars as leading female detective. And of course, Sheenan is now the leading detective on The Great Unforgotten. Did you kind of identify, Sinead, with that whole idea of a cop show with a genre show that you're in?
I mean, there's definitely detective work involved in both.
Yes.
One follows the legal course of detective work, and one doesn't. Robin very much is, they're all three of them are really shit detectives.
Yeah.
But that is what they're doing, essentially. They're Scooby-Doo detective work. And in the process of following little threads or big threads, they seem to get themselves further and further into trouble and make things worse.
Yes, yes.
But somehow it works out in the end, just like, you know.
Yeah,
Scooby-Doo.
Exactly. There's a bit where, I think it's in episode 4 maybe, where you've done some detective work at least, and you're very proud of it, and you say something like, I'm quite good at this stuff. And I thought, oh yeah, that's a nod. That's a nod to your other work.
Oh, it could be. Yes. Yes.
Yeah. Yeah.
The thing looks spectacular as well. I mean, it's just beautiful, right? The lighting and all the kind of neon-y glowing colour schemes and all of that, and obviously the shots of the landscape when we see those. Was that a thing you really wanted to kind of attempt to do, is make a thing that was visually stunning as well as being funny and dramatic and all of that?
Yeah, I did, but I think that's as far as my contribution went. I just said I wanted to look amazing. So that's all Mike Lennox and his team of brilliant like designers and lighting designers and camera operators. And you know, Mike's incredible at making, I think it's so rare that you find a director that can take what's inside your head and just put it on screen. He does it. And, you know, he's just a writer's director, really. So I love the look of the show, but that was certainly all him, you know. And he spoke to me all the time about it. We're always on the same page, you know. We never do something I think is wrong, but we're there together the whole time, talking the whole time. So it's a great team, you know. Yeah. I'm very lucky.
Yeah. And when you're in the middle of it, Sinead, are you aware of how it's going to look, or you know, you watch, when you watch the finished article, you're like, oh my god, it looks kind of incredible.
I've never been on a set before with so many bells and whistles and toys and gadgets. And like, my husband's a director, so I know a fancy lens when I see one. I mean, I don't know what they do, but I know when they come in those big fancy boxes, they're good ones. And we had a day before we started filming. Lisa, do you remember the day where it was like a camera test and we all had to do these random, Sinead, come to the front, and then you just stand at the front, turn to the side, then okay, and then you walk back, and I was like, what the hell are they doing? But then behind us then, there was all different types of coloured lights being shown. And then, as you were saying, boy, the neon signs and stuff, like, they were there. I was like, well, they're putting an awful lot of effort into this. So, like, I knew that it was big. The scale was big. The scale of the story was big, but the production as well, you could tell, you know, of a home, it's like Netflix was involved.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah. Does it make a big difference, Lisa, working for Netflix? Is that like part of the whole deal?
I mean, they've been very supportive. They really just want me to make the show that I have in my head. But I have to say, like, things haven't changed hugely for me because I have the exact same people around me. Like, I've been working with the same people for 16 years, so it feels just about like the same gang, which is kind of incredible. So things are kept quite small for me, so that I can just write and make the show. Yeah, so you feel very safe and looked after, you know.
Yeah, yeah. I love the glimpses we get of Robin's home life, Sinead, like the particularly where you attack your husband, having completely jumped to the most like ridiculous conclusions. She does. That's one of the defining things, but isn't it about her that she likes jumping to a conclusion?
Yes. Yeah, and I think she's firm, absolutely steadfast in her belief until even when she's proved wrong, she's not really wrong. You know, what's a stupid name for a man anyway? It's your own fault for being called Jesse. That kind of thing. But it was lovely to do that with Art Campion, who was in London Irish.
Poor Jim. And you've got an incredible supporting cast, Lisa, like Layla Fahlzad, Tom Basden, Ardlo Hanlon, Michelle Fairley, Josh Finnan, who's like the man of the moment.
Josh is incredible.
What a lovely performance from him. I thought fantastic. Yeah. And MJ Scanlon, who loves going over the top, right? I mean, he is just...
Oh, my God. It's brilliant. Yeah. It's like, for Emmett, I was like, I need someone who's immediately the baddie, and you just go to Emma J. Scanlon for that. Do you know what I mean? It can look so sinister. But with all the Ardle, you just go, who would be an eccentric hotel owner in Donegal? Obviously, it's Ardlo Hanlon. Do you know, it doesn't take much working out sometimes. It's so, and you've this incredible pool of talent, of comic talent in Ireland now. And those UK actors, Tom is hilarious, absolutely had us in wrinkles constantly. He's just so funny. Everyone was brilliant. It was brilliant.
And it's great fun to hang out with these characters. You do love a gang, don't you? A gang of girls, a gang of women, and it works really well. And by the end, we want to hang out with them again. Would you like to see this as a returning show?
I mean, I would love to, because I think once you have a cast like this, it's just such a pleasure to write for them, and you're constantly thinking of, I'm already thinking of what stupid situation they could get into, and I can hear them, but we'll have to see. It'll just depend who watches this, but I'd certainly love to do another one.
Sinead, up for series two?
Definitely. No question. No question.
And I have to ask before we depart, where are we with the next season of Unforgotten? There was a read through photo recently, and where are
we? Yeah, so we are shooting at the moment. Wow. So we're in the second or third week of the shoot. They very kindly released me.
I'm
going back into their care tomorrow evening.
Excellent.
And then we filmed till mid April. Brilliant. Yeah, and then it'll be out. That's way above my pay grade. I have no idea.
No, fair enough. Sometime. And do you watch that show, Lisa, finally? You must do.
I haven't seen it yet. No, but my parents are massive, massive fans. So I tend to not watch particularly any detective or thriller stuff when I'm trying to write that.
Fair enough.
I just get annoyed and jealous.
Yeah.
But I will. My parents are massive fans. Yeah, so I need to do that.
Yeah, brilliant. Well, congratulations on How to Get Home from Belfast. It's fantastic. Thank you. And thank you for joining us.
Thank you so much.
Thank you, Boyd. Thanks a million.
That was Lisa McGee and Sinead Keenan. And time now for this week's listener question. Let me just rummage around in the pre-triaged post bag. And we have a message here, Kay, from Angie.
Hi, Angie. Oh, my God, Den and Angie. Brilliant.
Angie says, as I listen to today's Pilot TV, I seriously considered cancelling my subscription following your unjustified conclusions that cats tolerate humans and do not love them. A view too often stated by dog lovers. I love both cats and dogs, but I do find the independence of cats to be the main reason for owning cats over dogs. My two cats are hugely affectionate and sociable, as demonstrated by one cat's reaction to my return from a two-week holiday, and there is a picture of this cat looking very affectionate.
Aww.
So there you go.
Sweet. What's the cat's name? Have we got any details?
No idea. She probably told me, but I've forgotten.
I was going to give him a shout-out.
So we should say, if people don't know, it's because Steph laid into cats everywhere on this podcast. She threw down the gauntlet. The furry gauntlet against cats, because she thinks they're evil, really.
And Steph is a huge dog lover. That's the thing.
Yeah.
And I think she's only got space in her affections for one animal at a time.
Yeah, that's it.
You can love both cats and dogs. I mean,
yes,
that's the point.
But, you know.
Anyway, Angie's question is not about cats or dogs. Mm-hmm. What she said is, it is prompted by Boyd's comment that industry, yes, we're back to industry, has reinvented itself each and every season. I immediately thought of The Good Place as another show that kept each season fresh. What other shows do you think reinvented themselves each year to the benefit of the show? I am excluding here the anthology shows like American Horror Story, True Detective, and Fargo. Still loving the pod, cat views aside. Although I'm starting to believe Kay really has left. What kind of job share means one job sharer doesn't return for a whole month? Asking as I need a job share like that.
No, listen, just to answer you on that point is that the reason why there was such a long gap for me originally coming back on is just because to let Steph settle in. And then also we knew that I'd be here for a couple of weeks when she was having her tonsils out. So, you know, that's why there'll be after this another big gap and then we'll get into a regular rhythm. Don't you worry about that. Don't want these boys to get unruly.
That's true. Kay has to keep us in line.
Mm-hmm.
So, reinvented and rejuvenated TV shows.
I will refer you to a little show called Doctor Who.
Mm.
Never heard of it.
Well, let me just tell you this. It's got a format which reinvents itself quite brilliantly throughout its multi-decade history, and it has a fantastic device called the regeneration, in which the Doctor moves on and is played by another actor when that said existing current Doctor decides to move on.
Really enjoying the fact that Kay is nodding as if she's learning new information here. It's great, which is, I think, a sign that she's not actually listening.
It is true. Oh my God. This is like the first, I rarely don't listen. But do you know why? It's because I was taking what Boyd was saying, but I was also thinking, I don't have an answer. So I was trying to simultaneously think of one. Sorry.
Oh, well, I'm glad I'm giving you time to think of an answer.
Yeah, exactly.
Okay. It's Doctor Who. The answer is fucking Doctor Who.
And this that kind of would have been my answer.
Absolutely.
Right, yeah. I see. Is given that it is one of your favourite shows, which as we've established favorite on this podcast.
I do like Doctor Who.
Which is your favourite reinvention, Doctor Who? Your favourite Doctor?
Well, I like Shooty, obviously, because that's the one I jumped on board with because I wasn't watching Doctor Who before then. But I also like that Tennant episode that James, do you remember, adamantly disagreed that I liked it. He thought that he knew better and I didn't.
Well, yeah. Funnily enough, weirdly.
So Tennant and Gatwa.
Anyway, it's an object lesson in regenerating, literally, and revitalising a show throughout its incredible run so far. So yeah, that would be my main answer. I also think The Leftovers is a good example.
That is a good example because it's based, the first season is based on the book.
Yeah.
And then afterwards it sort of ploughs its own furrow and it does go in a very different direction.
It does, yeah. The White Lotus, which I think has a really clear
anthology. It's kind of an anthology.
Do you see how quick they flip flop then? I agreed with Boyd and I was like, no, actually.
No, but I'm saying it's not an anthology because there are characters from different series that pop up.
There's like
No, that doesn't matter. It's enough. It's not a fucking anthology.
But isn't that the same for Doctor Who as well? Characters, recurring characters.
Well, Doctor Who isn't
an anthology. Yeah.
What he's saying is, for me, the definition of anthology show is a completely different story setting.
Oh, across a whole
cast,
series.
Across each season.
Yeah.
And White Lotus is not an example.
Well,
of that.
I think
it's
we'll let Angie be the judge of that.
Well, okay, Angie, let us know. But I think because Angie is a woman of fine taste and, you know.
Oh, look at you, currying favour.
I think she'll agree that while it feels
Angie,
a little bit like an anthology.
Because it's an anthology.
Because it does reinvent itself as I'm answering the question properly.
Yes.
Each series. But actually, characters pop up from previous seasons. It's all in its own world, in its own timeline, and it is a consistent on-running show, albeit one that magically reinvents itself.
In summary,
time.
I agree with Boyd.
It's genius. Thank you. I rest my case.
Yeah.
Right. You'll be pleased to know that I've prepared at least 13,000 examples of this, but I'm going to whittle them down in the interest of keeping the show tight, but it does give you time to Google furiously for your turn. Right. So,
I agree with Boyd.
You're just agreeing with Boyd. Yeah. Fine. There are loads of these. I thought an interesting one for this, really, is Blackadder. Because Blackadder, which obviously starts as a completely different show when it's just Richard Curtis for Series 1, and then when Ben Elton comes on for Series 2, it's basically another show. They might as well have called it something different.
Yeah, kind of like an anthology.
But same actors, kind of playing the same characters.
Well, yeah, but they're not the same characters.
Aren't they?
If you're going to go down the anthology fascism route.
Right, okay. Anthology fascism is my new band, by the way. Alias, I thought, was an interesting one because in season 2 of Alias...
With Jennifer Garner,
our friend Jennifer Garner, who will be on the podcast next week, talking to you, not me. it totally switches from being like a double agent show to being a more traditional spy series. Yep. And then they have a time jump in a later season, it reinvents itself again. And then there's a point where they just eject all of that absolutely mad Rambaldi kind of weird Da Vinci Code mythology and become much more spy show of the week.
Yeah. Do you know, Ricky Gervais was in Alias, wasn't he?
Yes.
Incredible to think. Yes.
So was Bradley Cooper.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Mad.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
But that's done the opposite thing. So that's something that's gone, it goes from being very serialized to being quite episodic towards the end, whereas loads of shows have done the opposite, where they've begun as episodic series and then gradually become more sort of mythology arc-based as they've gone along. So I am thinking things like Justified, which started out as a case of the week and then became an ongoing concern. Deep Space Nine, the big Star Trek example, a show that became very serialized as it went on. Okay, Fringe. Yeah.
Excuse me while I power down.
Thank you. Fringe started a bit X-Files-y, where it was like Freak of the Week, and then it became this weird cross-dimensional mythology show, which is what, and Person of Interest, which people talk about quite a lot, did something very similar there. The other thing I wanted to mention was
this is the abridged version, by the way.
This is the abridged version, which is David E. Kelly's The Practice, which is quite dark and gritty legal drama. And then the final season of it, James Spader joins as Alan Shaw, and it gets a very quirky, comedic, slightly surreal feel to it. And then that's what tees up Boston Legal, which is a full-on batshit comedy legal show. But because that season kind of bridges those two shows, it's a really weird reinvention of The Practice. So that's my answer there. I had a few others, but I will, for the sake of brevity, leave them and not talk about them.
Okay.
Yeah. Even if it kills me. Which it might.
You're the one who's brought in the new brevity rule.
No, I'm here for it.
Okay, is adhering to the NBR. New rule completely.
That's how seriously I take it.
That's right.
Take
that's right.
Have you found any the shows that reinvent themselves?
No, like I said, I agree with you. And it's now time to move on.
Okay, good. Fabulous. If you would like your question answered, or in Kate's case, ignored, on the Pilot TV podcast, do feel free to send it in via email to pilottv@empiremagazine.com. Marvellous. What comes next in this podcast
news.
Of ours? Oh, that's right. News. The latest news, which I have absolutely been looking at and know all about.
Well, there was a big news story, which is that, remember, we've been waiting 18 months, roughly, to see The Pit. Those of us who have not
we
on
have.
A long-haul flight
yes,
to and from...
Yes, us muggles have been left waiting.
Yeah, those of us who don't go on long-haul flights to America fairly regularly.
Yeah. In this room, just me.
Who have managed to watch it, because it is on all Virgin flights, I believe. I'm not being paid for by Virgin, by the way. It just happens
he
to be.
He wants to be, but he's not.
Well, I'm available to take more flights if you want long haul. Anyway, yeah, so I watched the season one over two long haul trips. James watched it ages ago.
I did.
But
it's finally coming. It's been confirmed. March 26th is the launch day of HBO Max in the UK, and it will, on the right from the start, season one in its entirety will be available to watch, to stream on that service, and then season two will launch kind of, I think, at the same time. We'll still be week by week because it's airing now in America week
by week. So series two launches same day?
I don't know if they haven't confirmed, I think, exactly if it's going to be the same day,
but it'll be simultaneous.
My guess is that it will.
Mm. Well, the first six or so episodes have aired in the States already,
So I'm guessing it will, but that is a guess.
Exciting.
Yeah, and so other stuff. This HBO Max is going to be is the home of Euphoria, House of the Dragon. It's quite complicated. So Sky Atlantic still carries on. If you've got Sky Atlantic, or you get it, you know, as part of your Now TV package or whatever, you will still be able to watch shows that are ongoing, HBO shows like Euphoria, House of the Dragon, The White Lotus we mentioned before, all those big shows.
And Just Like That?
Yeah, well, that finished anyway, I believe, strictly speaking.
I was just thinking of ones where I can remember the logo on the credits.
So those existing shows will carry on being shown on Sky Atlantic.
Good.
But they will also be on HBO Max, and HBO Max will be the place that new shows arrive to, like The Pit, etc. Mm-hmm. And there's a show called Lanterns coming up, which is
Is that what The Comeback will be on?
Yes, so The Comeback will be on HBO Max, yeah. But I think because The Comeback was on Sky already, I think that will be available as well. So it's
confusing, that.
It's a bit confusing, but, you know, you'll get used to it.
So basically ping pong between Sky and HBO Max, and you'll find what you're looking for.
Yeah, it's a bit of a ping pong, yeah. And the other thing is, so Sky also had this big announcement this week that they've got a new deal with Netflix, Disney Plus, and HBO Max, and in fact even Hayu. Do you know Hayu, which is the their
is it
kind
Hayu?
Of real Hayu?
Yeah, Hayu?
Hayu?
I think it's Hayu.
Oh, okay, Amanda Seyfried.
Hayu.
Seyfried. Hayu. Yeah. It's that's going to be launched later in the year, but for £24 a month. Now, this sounds like an advert. I'm not advertising. This is just the story. This was quite a big story.
Just dealing the facts.
For £24 a month, you get all of those subscriptions.
Oh wow!
But that's 25. on top of your Sky subscription?
£24.
Right? Oh, sorry.
No, not on top of it. That's the whole subscription. Yeah, if you don't have sport, any other additions right. to it, you get your entertainment package, essentially, is all of those things.
Wait, sorry, can you just repeat the channels you're going to get for £24? Because that's a good deal.
Sky. Yeah. So existing Sky stuff. All the Sky stuff.
Except for sport. Yeah. Fine, I don't need sport.
Except for sport and movies, yeah. cinema.
Whatever, that's fine.
All its basic entertainment stuff.
Yeah.
HBO Max
yep.
launching.
Pit.
Hey You.
Hey You.
Netflix.
Mm-hmm.
All of that in one package.
Listen, I'm not getting paid either, but actually I might consider swapping my deal.
This yeah. does feel a lot like a commercial plug at this point.
No.
But this is a user service, because yeah, that is exactly, genuinely yeah. like, people are paying a lot of money exactly. for individual subscriptions, yeah. and that's...
I Instagrammed a shot of the... So I went to the announcement of that package.
Yeah.
And I Instagrammed the image of big things coming to Sky, whether that's... And people were DMing me saying, oh, can you talk about this on the podcast and explain what the... So it's not... I'm not advertising
anything. I see. It's just a listener service.
It's a listener service, factually. Now, what I should add that if you want the 4K Ultra HD versions of those channels, you have to pay more. So you do pay more for that, like, you know, a few pounds more a month, because it's, I mean, I do always think, who's watching stuff not in HD
Me.
Anymore?
Well, so
really? So that's... Yeah, okay.
Not in HD is different to not in 4K, though.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah. Sorry, not... Yeah.
I've basically got an aerial on top of the TV yeah. that I'm moving around, yeah. right? So okay. there are some people left.
God, okay. Get a new TV, Kate, please.
Yeah, I'm waiting for you to buy me one, thanks.
Yeah, you're right. Yeah, it's in HD, but yeah...
HD, not UHD.
Not yes. HD, not UHD. Yeah. Exactly. Fair enough. But anyway, so that's quite an interesting thing. And they're really like going, this is like the biggest thing in the world, biggest kind of all-round package in the world, including all of those. Because people complain about having to subscribe separately to all these different streaming services, particularly. And, you know, if you want Prime Video...
It's expensive, so yeah.
If you want Prime Video or Apple TV, those are different. You have to pay for
it. I was about to say, now that you've basically told people to cancel their Apple TV subscription and subscribe exclusively to Sky for all of these packages, does that mean that Tim Cook comes around to your house and takes back all the goodies he gave you?
You know what it means? Well, it means that James and I are available for those trips going forward.
It is. Boyd's Tim, if you're listening.
Persona, non grata, Apple, and Boydie James
has forsaken
and I
you.
Don't listen to this nonsense. In fact, Timmy.
That's the reason you're going to knock on.
No, in fact, what's interesting is if you've got Sky Q, did you say you've got Sky Q? Yeah.
No.
Oh, okay. Sorry, I thought you said you wanted to. If you've got Sky Q, it actually offers you Apple TV shows on its homepage.
Yeah.
Anyway, because it's trying to be a platform where you can access everything you want from it. But those channels are part of this deal. But obviously, Apple TV is a glorious streaming service in its own right.
Do you know what? The exciting launch of HBO Max makes me think of the best thing that's going to be on HBO. And it's not actually at this point The Pit, although it is fabulous.
You're talking about The Comeback.
Nor is it The Comeback. Okay. And it's not even my beloved The Last of Us, though it is connected to that.
Yes.
And it is that I'm now very strongly suspecting that The Last of Us will end with the third season.
Right.
And the reason why I'm very strongly suspecting that is because Craig Mazin is going to be doing an adaptation of one of the best video games ever made, Baldur's Gate 3, for HBO.
Oh.
Apparently he has played this game for 1,000 hours. How he had the time to start making things like Chernobyl and, you know, The Last of Us while he's playing 1,000 hours of Baldur's Gate 3, I don't know. It's a great game, though.
That's unbelievable. So he's doing another hugely famous and beloved...
A fantasy TV series which will follow on from the story that began in the video game Baldur's Gate 3.
That is incredible.
One of my favourite games ever.
Yeah.
So, I'm very, very excited about this fact. So that's going to be coming to, presumably, HBO Max, since it is an HBO show.
Yeah, absolutely. 100% will be, yeah. Yeah.
So I've got a bit of old news, which is that the Bergerac Season 2 trailer dropped.
Wow. The John Nettles one, or?
No, you always say this. It's with Damon Maloney. And it got me excited because, as you will recall, James, because you listen to every single thing I say to you.
I do, yes.
Do you remember that weekend when I binged the first series last year?
Yes, I actually do.
Yeah, and I enjoyed it. So I'm very happy he's reprising his role. And the trailer is very breathy. There's a lot of huffing and puffing. But what I have gleaned is that he's potentially moving on romantically after the death of his wife, and his issues are far from behind him. So, you know, there's a lot going on, but I'm excited. No date, I don't think, so we'd have to keep
going. Not more excited by the new Bill Lawrence TV show that a trailer dropped for, which is the Rooster show with Steve Carell?
Okay, I wasn't going to mention this. I watched the trailer.
And you weren't impressed?
I didn't find it very, very funny.
Interesting.
Did you?
I didn't watch the trailer. So I have no opinion.
What a fascinating discussion this is going to be.
Have you seen it, Boyd, the trailer?
Yeah, I know what you mean. Yes, I did see it. And it looked quite...
It seemed okay, but it just... Yeah. Anyway, I'm sure when the series cranks up, I'll love it. But I wasn't overwhelmed by the trailer.
Talking of Bill Lawrence, of course, one of the genuine news story I think that was exciting was the trailer for Scrubs, for the rebooted Scrubs, which is, of course, the Bill Lawrence creation. Did you see that, James? I know you're a Scrubs fan.
Have I watched the trailer? Well, the thing that has bothered me about that is that the janitor is not going to be in it.
I know.
And so I'm almost boycotting the new series of Scrubs because of that. I'm boycotting it to the extent that I'm going to have to watch it for the show.
Yeah.
Well, but, he is in Shrinking, so maybe you need to get on that.
Yeah, maybe
just
so.
Just FYI, yeah.
But John C. McGinley's going to pop up in it.
And he's fabulous.
He's absolutely
brilliant. Yes, Dr. Cox.
But he's not in it all the way through. He's described as a guest star, which is interesting. But I thought the trailer looked quite funny, and I'm intrigued to see what it's going to be like. Yes, I'm fascinated. And it's going to be on Disney Plus in the UK, February 25th, 26th. Something like that, yes. So, but the revival of Scrubs, it's a big deal. I can't believe, in fact, this goes back to the cats and dogs discussion of earlier. Mm-hmm. You know what I'm going to say? The big news of the week, I can't believe you haven't. Yeah, see?
Claudia!
Oh my God,
Claudia is going to be co-hosting Crufts.
Yeah, just cue it up.
Yeah, you know, Claudia Winkleman,
off she goes.
Friend of the pod. Go on, Boyd.
Well, I mean, what's incredible is that, you know, she's got her BBC One chat show coming. So when Graham Norton... The aforementioned Graham Norton show ends in a couple of weeks' time. It's annual stint. There'll be a break. And Claudia Winkleman's going to get that slot with her own chat show.
Can't
which
wait.
Is brilliant. That was announced a while ago. But she's also going to do, and she'll obviously be doing Celebrity Traitors, if not filming now, maybe
also
very
soon.
Also
the piano she's got.
The piano she's got.
So many things.
But she's clearly gone, I think she's gone, I haven't asked her about this myself.
Don't do Lally.
My assumption is she's gone, you know what, of all the shows that are out there on TV, I really fucking love dogs and I really want to do Crufts. So she's joining the existing team. How about this? Two national treasures, Claire Balding and Claudia Winkleman, together
Balders
on
and
TV, plus cute dogs throughout, across its whole 3 or 4 day thing.
Yeah.
I mean, it's genuinely thrilled and excited about the prospect of this
Do you
thing.
Watch Crufts?
I do watch Crufts. Quite, not all of it, but I do watch quite a lot of it. And you know, partly why I watch Crufts. I mean, I do love a dog. I am a dog lover. But, and so you get
What's
so
your
many.
Dog?
My friend's Border Terrier is my favourite dog, Zamo. But
I like a black lab.
Oh, black labs are brilliant. Yeah. So yeah,
James?
I like huskies.
Oh, you're very yeah. I can see that. I can see that.
I want a husky.
Yeah, huskies are good.
Yeah, I can definitely see that.
But Crufts is inherently brilliant to watch. It's fantastic, and Claire Balding does a brilliant job on it for a start. But just if you've seen Best in Show, the legendary comedy film from that gang who did Spinal Tap and Waiting for Guffman, etc. Best in Show is, for me, the funniest of all of them. Even funnier than Spinal Tap, I would say.
Is it one of your favourite films
it's
of all time?
It's one of my favourite films of all time, without doubt. And when you watch Crufts, all you can think about is Best in Show, because it's got the judging, the madness of the judging and the commentary and the observing the obsessive world of dogs, of dog competitions, of which Crufts is the biggest in the world. And so it's an absolute unending delight. And so I partly watched Crufts with thinking of the joy of Best in Show at the same time. But yeah, Claudia co-hosting that show, absolute dream come true.
Fabulous.
And peak Pilot TV stuff, genre, obviously.
Yeah, clearly, yes. We will, of course, be reviewing Crufts on an upcoming episode of this podcast.
Let's bloody hope so.
You will, if Steph has anything to do with it. She is obsessed.
Yeah, Steph is always Best in Show.
You're saying it in front of me. So out of order.
Charming.
Anyway, if that's all the news, then I just wanted to end on the sad news that James van der Beek passed away. He was 48 and he had bowel cancer. His wife announced it, I think, on Instagram, saying he met his final days with courage, faith and grace. So very sad news.
Yes, very sad. There have been lots of lovely testimonials from people like Sarah Michelle Gellar and his other co-stars. Really sad. Only 48 years old.
That's absolutely shocking. He was great. And I'll tell you what's really sad is reading the article today about what his widow saying they had to raise loads of money because to pay for... his treatment.
Actually, yeah, I'm glad you mentioned that because I wanted to bring it up because he apparently a few months or, you know, a year ago, he was started selling his Dawson's Creek memorabilia to pay for treatment. And actually, I saw today online that some of the friends and family of the van der Beeks have set up a GoFundMe. So just to say, if anyone, you know, wants to, do check that out because it sounds like they're in a bit of a tough spot.
Yeah, very sad. Right, that is it for this week's news. Let's move on to the reviews. And first up this week, we have The Walsh Sisters on BBC One. This is Stephanie Prysner's adaptation of the Marion Keyes novel series about a group of five Dublin-based sisters and their entirely chaotic personal lives. And this stars Extraordinaries Mairead Tyers, Derry Girls Louisa Harland, Shadow and Bones Danielle Galligan, among others, not to mention Prysner herself. It's mayhem. It's messy. It's extremely bickery, but does it capture Keyes sisters in all their madness? Kay, please do tell us.
Little fact for you. When I arrived at Heat, I was a big Marianne Keyes fan, and I reviewed some of her books, and I received a massive bunch of flowers from her, thanking me personally.
Did you?
Handwritten note.
Oh,
yeah,
wow.
Very sweet. But yeah, I was a huge fan of her books, and particularly of the Walsh family. I have to confess, there are a lot of details that now, you know, it was so long ago, have slipped my mind, but I remember the key, crucial parts. And for me, this has absolutely done it justice. It's a hard feat. So you said, like, Stephanie Prysner is the one who's adapted this. I think she's done a beautiful job, because it's a lot. This is based on multiple books, multiple characters, particularly the five sisters, and they each have really sort of in-depth layered stories and character arcs. And so to try and distill that all into one series, or even in this first episode that we're reviewing, is a mean feat, and I think she's really pulled it off. The first episode is sort of centered around Rachel, who, as you've alluded to, is like very messy. Well, she's self-absorbed and charming, but she's got addiction issues, right? And so this charts the impact it has on her boyfriend Luke, played by Jade Duffy, and also for her loyal sister Anna, played by Louisa Harland, and fiance Aidan, played by Samuel Anderson, as well as the ripple effect on the rest of the family. She's got three other sisters and her parents. Each of the sisters are really well drawn. And that's the thing. This is what I think Stephanie Prysner's done really well, is that she's really honoured those vividly drawn characters Marion created in the books, and also reflects the dark comic humour, because this is a regular sort of Irish, close-knit, dysfunctional family. And it really comes across, you know, each of them have really interesting stories. So the other sisters include Claire, scatty single mum. She's played by Danielle Galligan. We have people pleaser Maggie, who's struggling to conceive, and that she's played by Prysner herself. You got Helen, who's played by Mairead Tyers, who's snarky and struggles with anxiety. And then you got the parents as well, played by Carrie Crowley and Aidan Quinn. So I think this first episode does a really good job of establishing these characters, the dynamics. It's very darkly funny. It really conveys the emotion of, you know, being in a family with someone with addiction issues and how hard that is, especially when they're in denial. So all in all, I think fans of the books will be pleased with this. I was delighted by it. I think each episode, I've watched 4.5 episodes. Each episode is funny, darkly funny, but also packs an emotional punch. And also, I've got to say, the performances of, in particular, Caroline Menson and Louisa Harland are fantastic in their portrayal of addiction and loss. Each ep packs an emotional punch, and you will probably be in tears. And also great music choices as well.
There is a scene where they do a little kind of routine in the bar.
Yeah.
Which I have to say, I found borderline excruciating. I'm looking at James for... No, this is not criticism.
But it's authentic, I think.
Oh, yeah, no, 100%. But in fact, actually, what makes it very authentic and believable, if excruciating, is you've got the blokes, the partners sitting there watching this display of sisterly...
I don't know why you're acting like this when at the Sky Christmas party we were doing a routine, all three of us.
I mean, yeah, of course. I very much identified with the blokes sitting there watching, horrified as their loved ones performed in front of people.
They're having a good crack.
They're having a great fucking crack.
Yeah.
What a week for Irish women in ensemble casts in very well-written and directed ongoing serial TV shows, because How to Get to Heaven from Belfast was brilliant, as we've discussed. And I've never read a Marion Keyes novel in my life, but I know. It just does show you. I do feel like... By not having read them, I'm buying into the patriarchy and the world of publishing, which completely divides, this is a side issue, but I just thought I'd mention anyway, it completely divides book reading into the genders. I mean,
yeah,
basically, men are not in a million years supposed to read Marion Keyes' books. I'm sure she'd be delighted if they were. But it's all the marketing of so-called chick lit, you know, all of that all comes down to the idea that men would never in a million years read any of these types of books.
Yeah, all commercial fiction. It's just
and
bullshit.
Similarly, you know, yeah, there are genres aimed primarily at men. But anyway, so I've never, I have gone along with the majority of men
Big
who wouldn't
mistake,
get
huge.
I know, huge mistake. Mm-hmm. Maybe I'll belatedly go back and read some of them. But as a TV show in its own right, this is excellent. And I think what I really liked about it was that it's not kind of, it isn't ever silly. There's humour in all the way through. It's injected with humour, which comes from the interrelationships, mainly between the sisters and their little kind of ways of expressing themselves. And kind of, they're all quite sharp and all kind of slagging each other off all the way through.
And the relationship with the parents, the mum.
The mum is scathing all the way through to, like, all of them, basically. The much put upon dad. And by barely identifiable Aidan Quinn, by the way, who's, you know, like just seeing him doing this role, he's great in it, by the way. And I just thought there's little moments that are so well done. Like, in fact, that bar moment, I think it's really good at depicting social drinking and drug taking, mm-hmm. and the effect that has on people. I mean, the very first scene is kind of all about, you know, has or hasn't Rachel, the character of Rachel, gone too far with her drinking and drug taking? And that becomes the theme all the way through. And I thought that was dramatized so well, and particularly that relationship between the character of Rachel and Anna, the two closest sisters in a way, and very
codependent.
And they're very much how far Anna is going to let her sister carry on with her messy life. She would be described as a hot mess were it not for the fact that that phrase was banned when Terry White was on regular on the show, quite rightly. But she is an absolute mess, and she's completely embroiled in this whole world of drug taking, etc. But I just thought it was really well handled and really convincingly done, and the interrelationships just kind of made perfect sense, and it is funny without trying too hard, and really importantly, in this day and age, in the day and age where people judge whether to carry on watching a series after, you know, half a minute, it draws you in very quickly. Mm-hmm. I thought, and I believed in it. You know, my 5 minute test. If after 5 minutes you think, oh yeah, I believe in these people, you will carry on watching it. And so from that point of view, it worked really well. And it also has a big cliffhanger of an ending each episode, which again I think
it does that so well.
It really does, and that really makes you want to carry on watching it. And I had to watch the second episode off dinner first, because there's a huge thing that happens at the end of the first episode. So from all those points of view, they've done a really good job. They've done a fantastic job, and particularly Stephanie Price, who is the adapter, at adapting these books, at turning into, whether you read the books or not, a really entertaining, clever, smart, funny TV show in its own right.
And a very daunting prospect for her,
oh, I bet.
By the way.
My one criticism...
Too many corridors.
Shut up. Samuel Anderson, who I love mm-hmm. in everything, and he's great in Amandaland, for example, at the moment, and he's a very handsome... funny, talented guy. I could not work out what his accent was to start with. What the fuck?
I was like,
is
he doing American?
Eventually, they make it clear that he is American.
Yes.
But quite late on in the episode, they refer to that. And all the way up to that point, I'm like, is it a version of Irish? Is it? I could not get a handle on what the fuck. To the point where it's driving me to distraction. And I was like, literally, I was like Googling it, going, is the character American in the novels? Is he American in the novels, Kay? Do you remember?
I can't remember.
No. Anyway, it was, and then when it was finally, okay, he's American, but I don't think maybe because we know so well how Samuel Anderson really speaks, or like, because, you know, going back to the History Boys that was in, and I've followed his career and I probably met him quite a few times. It was so weird to have him doing this accent. That's my literally.
Don't let that put you off.
It has not let me put it off. That's my one issue. But he's brilliant anyway, and it's a great show.
James,
thanks.
Please give a favourable report to this.
Well, I am not close personal friends with Samuel Anderson, so I was not in any way put off by his American accent. It was absolutely fine. No, it's really good. I really enjoyed it. It was kind of a late sub in to our schedule this week. But I had a really good time with it. I wasn't really sure what to expect from it. But exactly as you said, I think there's some very. So it's not. It's not a comedy, but I think you've got some...
Oh my God, this is not a comedy.
No, but you've got... What's interesting is you have some comedic actors in there, very experienced comedic actors who are very, very good at that. And so it is funny, but it's kind of quite darkly funny.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
But it's really, really enjoyable. And I think, you know, their dynamic is great, their relationships are great, the plot... While it's not like, you know, a high-stakes story, you're immediately invested... in this first episode, in Rachel's well-being, because it starts with her on a night out getting absolutely twatted and her boyfriend mm-hmm. calling an ambulance. And so immediately, like, oh my God, what is happening here? And then it, you know, continues her denial over this addiction thing. But yeah, I wouldn't have necessarily thought this would be my kind of show, but I thought it was great. Yeah,
brilliant.
I really
enjoyed it. Irish sense of humour comes across very well. And more Irish shows, please, now.
Yes, can we have all the Irish shows?
Yeah. Irish and Australian, bring them on.
The Walsh Sisters, then, which is on BBC One and iPlayer. When, Boydie?
Saturday, this coming Saturday, the 21st of February, 9:15 p.m. And can we? It's interesting. So Saturday night is the new home of kind of BBC drama. So off with, you know, the Josh Finnan show, which was you finished watching.
Waiting for the Out.
Just finished on BBC on Saturday nights. And I was saying how odd it is in a way that had a Saturday night slot. But now clearly they've established this as a thing. Mm. And so, yeah, this has got now quite a big prime time, you know, nice slot for what is a really good show.
Yeah. If you're not out on Saturday night, watch it.
Exactly.
Next up.
Which of us is out on Saturday night? Don't fool yourself.
Is it getting hot in here? It might be, because next up we have the triumphant return of Gabriel Basso as the Night Agent on Netflix. God. Steady yourself, Kay. Steady yourself. The smelling salts are over there. I'm not saying the Kay returning to this podcast and the Night Agent returning to our screens is a coincidence.
It is a coincidence.
However, I'm also not saying that. But this is, of course, the third season of the show, and it sees Peter Sutherland. He's now a proper, fully qualified Night Agent, and he's on the trail of a rogue Treasury official who's stolen classified material, and he's hunkier than ever. Clearly, Kay will be far too of a fluster to, you know, talk about this objectively.
You're
so we
food.
Turn to Boyd, who is hopefully immune to the Night Agent's sexy charms.
I can't even remember, like, you actually...
Okay.
So let's go
back. Let's rewind.
Because
I basically once said, yeah, exactly. Yeah. He piggybacked me saying in our first review of it, whatever, that I thought he was handsome, but we agreed that maybe it wasn't the best, you know, like highest quality of drama, etc. And then from then on, he was just ragging me fancying this guy.
So you did say you thought he was handsome.
I did at the time, and I instantly regretted it. And then,
I'm sure you did.
Yeah,
he's actually kind of like a bit of a funny looking fella.
This is why I regretted it, because and I didn't want to say this, but now that you've gone into it, is that. I thought he was handsome for a moment in the thing. I said it stupidly on the pod.
Yeah.
And then he's been going on for years about it, and I've actually changed my mind. But
oh my God, poor guy.
I can't believe both of you are now throwing shade at the objectively handsome Gabriel Basso.
No, he is. No, and then I keep on flip-flopping because I was watching this. I was like, oh, maybe.
See? She loves him.
Anyway.
We're on the clock.
That's all right. Anyway, but yeah, he's quite, let's just say, he's not your standard leading man looks. He's got a kind of...
Oh, really? I don't think he's kind of leading man. Is that you, James?
Oh, yes. Dashing. Dashing.
Let's not get hung up about it. Anyway, he is an interesting presence in the centre of this. Frankly, I mean, it's actually better than I remembered it being.
Mm-hmm.
It's been quite popular, to be fair. It's a hit.
Oh, James, the fact that something's a huge hit on the streaming service like this does not guarantee it's good.
No,
I mean,
but
some of the worst things in history are massive on Netflix. So, you know, I get it. It's a hit. Of course, it's a hit. But... It is equally, and partly because it's a hit, is I think it is very formulaic and undemanding, etc. But I do think this seems better in terms of quality, in terms of like ambition, direction. Even the writing isn't quite as I remember it being so generic to start with. I could barely kind of rouse any interest.
Agreed.
In
although
it.
There is the cheesy line of in a flashback. What I'd say is very good because it has a recap, which I definitely needed.
Yeah. Yeah, I've got the same, yeah.
Yeah, and in the flashback, which, by the way, goes back to 23 years previously, there's a
little kiddie.
Yeah, the mum says, "Promise me you'll do the right thing, even when it's hard."
Yeah, that flashback was completely ridiculous and totally unwarranted. And yeah, who needed it? It was insane. But I guess they're trying to flesh out his character, because if he's not there, then he's a kind of like a banal nothing at the centre of this show.
Wow.
No, he's fine. But they're trying their best to make him...
You can't deliver a blow like that and go, no, he's fine.
Well, they're trying their best to make the character three-dimensional at least and have something, because he's a bit of a routine. It's just a routine kind of, you know...
So what you're saying is that people like Kate just objectify him, and he's a real person beneath his hunky
exterior.
No, that's what
you're saying.
No, okay. James.
He is generic, but he is trying to, like, he's on this quest. I think what it helped do is, you know, kind of flesh out the quest he's on to right the wrongs that he has done in the previous series.
Sure. Don't get me wrong. But what I was pleasantly surprised about was it felt like the scope and ambition of it had been ratcheted up. So, for example, there's a whole sequence at a football match, which I thought they did a brilliant job at, because I don't know how they did it, to be honest. Well, they must have filmed some of it at a real match, because there was the match going on, and then all kinds of things were happening in the stands. Mm-hmm. And I just thought that was really cleverly done. There was probably lots of...
At one point, I wondered if it was an England team playing. It wasn't, was it?
No. No. They're two Where were they?
I love you're looking at me at this point. It's an Eastern European.
It was an Eastern European place where it's set, and that was a game going on. And they just did it really well. That could easily go horribly wrong. It would look awful. But I thought personally, so James would probably chime in and say, "Look, the volume was terrible," or whatever. But I thought they did that very well, and the action sequences were well directed. So I think it's a kind of one of those Netflix shows that is as you said, really popular and basically quite well done, if a bit generic, but better than I remembered it being when we first reviewed it first time around. Mm. They'll be thrilled and delighted to hear.
Yeah.
I mean, it's wildly generic, isn't it, really? Yeah. Sure. Because this has been on my list. Like, I dismissed it, as I think we all did, when it first came out. I was like, I don't need to see any more of this. And then because it's been quite a hit, and it's on its third season, which is no small thing on Netflix, I was like, oh, I must go back to that. Listeners, I will not be going back to The Night Agent. I get exclusively Reveal.
What a shock.
Yeah. Sorry.
Well, listen, this isn't, no comparison with The Night Manager. It's in a different, this is less finesse, less classy, less everything than that. But what I would say is, because I, like you, didn't go back and watch anymore, for some reason it does what it sets out to do, right? But it draws you in. That's what I found with this, because there were moments when I thought, like the cheesy dialogue or the bits where, I didn't fully buy into him being this highly skilled agent, right? Because there's so many moments, well, there's a couple of moments, I think he's in Turkey and like such conspicuous activity like
this. Yes, he's in Istanbul. I got it right. I said Eastern Europe before. Yeah. It shows how much attention I was paying, but yeah. It is in Istanbul, yes.
And he's like, he's got this baseball cap on and like he's doing this, he's involved in this chase. And you're like, this is so not covert. What are you doing? I would do a better job.
Yeah, yeah.
But then when I was Googling it, I realised that actually in the previous season, he had a desk job. So maybe he's learning on the job.
That's part of the idea, isn't it?
Yeah,
that
exactly.
He's gone from desk job clerk heroic
action. So I was being uncharitable
figure.
When I was watching it. And then I subsequently realised. But I do think it draws you in. And it is pacey. It is high octane. It's thrilling. It's globe spanning. So, I mean, it's got a lot of the things elements that you would want from a thriller like this. So what I'm saying is it's not your prestige drama, but there is something very watchable about it.
Just to say,
I'm sure there is.
Oh, here we go.
Shut up,
very
just
watchable.
Just to say the game he goes to is a Beşiktaş game, which is in one of the Turkish big Turkish football clubs. So it's confusing Turkey with Eastern Europe. And we can either cut it out or can admit my incompetence when I'm reviewing the show.
I think you know where we're going to land.
Yeah,
on
I think
that.
I do as well.
It makes you more human and authentic.
Thanks. Yeah, thanks, mate. Makes you relatable.
Thanks, mate. Anyway, that is a good sequence, the Beşiktaş football sequence. James, you've kind of said you're not going to watch it.
I have nothing
listener,
else to
dear listener, you're not going to carry on watching
I'm
it.
Never.
Do you know what? I'm probably not going to carry on watching it either because I've got too much to watch.
Yeah, me too.
Absolutely not. Okay, moving hastily on from that, and the last show we have to talk about this week is, of course, The Last Thing He Told Me, except it isn't, is it? Because it was embargoed, so we're not going to be able to do that. But as we've said, Jennifer Garner will be on next week, and she'll do a much better job. In the meantime, it has been pointed out that we entirely avoided talking about Bridgerton when it returned for its fourth season, and that, in fact, we have given short shrift to Bridgerton as a whole on
this
podcast.
Well, to be fair, it was heavily embargoed, so it didn't fit in with our schedule. We in terms of we couldn't have reviewed it before it went out on Netflix, and then it went out, and then it was too late, and then we reviewed something else on Plus. I'm just explaining that we haven't ignored it deliberately. It's just, as an ongoing show, we didn't have time for it, and it was embargoed.
Well, we have about 5 minutes left. So, Kate, would you like to give us a whistle-down tour of the latest season of Bridgerton?
Yeah. Well, I'll just give my verdict, which is that I watched the first half when it first landed, and it really enjoyed it. I enjoyed the focus on the upstairs-downstairs dynamic this time round, and this mini revolution or revolt that's going on amongst the domestic staff, plus the fact that the older characters, their lives and romances are getting focused on a bit more. So you've got Lady Banbury's bid for freedom, and you've got Lady Bridgerton getting back on the horse, so to speak.
Which horse?
and then at the centre of this, of course, is the cross-class romance between Benedict and Sophie, played by Yerin Ha, who is a maid, but also she was at the masquerade ball. It's about whether they can transcend the social the conventions that say they can't be together because she's of a different, supposedly a different social class. two things. Right, for, so for overall, I just really enjoyed it. I enjoyed it, I think, more than last series. Two things. It's made me want to go to a ball or a masked ball. So if anyone is having one, please invite me.
Oh, yeah, I'm going to throw one, you know.
You're the kind of person who actually would.
Yeah, you would.
You've got the fine, the means.
Are you thinking like a bit like Eyes Wide Shut?
Steady on.
No.
Fidelio.
No, I'm just saying in his, like, in, I don't know, his East Wing or whatever, he could just have a ball. But also, I was furious at the fact that I had to wait for the second half. I know it's a model of Netflix to split in two, but, you know, the wait has been, feels interminable, even though it's not that long. And it's been exacerbated by the fact that at the end, by Benedict's bell-end behaviour towards Sophie, which I was furious at.
Yeah, he's a bit of a twat, isn't he?
Yeah, he is, yeah.
And am I right in thinking, have I got confused? Or in the when he was first introduced back mm-hmm. in the beginning, he was like having sex with men as well, wasn't he?
Yeah, yeah.
Is that a thing that he's still
I think so,
doing?
Yeah, because in this series we see... I think, is it in this series we see him also maybe having some fun with a man? I don't know, but yeah, that's...
So he's officially, he's like a bisexual character.
He's fluid, boys. Okay. Don't label him.
No. I was just worried because I was wondering whether they suddenly decided not to address that or you know, kind of ignore the fact that that happened ages ago.
I think it might be referenced in this series, but throughout it has been. And, you know, he's generally just a rakish character who is having his cake and eating it.
It certainly is. I have questions, though. Is it still as... I watched the most of the first episode and it's kind of... Tonally, it's the same as ever was, but it felt slight. Is there more shagging and gratuitous nudity coming up in the... Or have they toned that down?
The ones I've seen, I haven't seen a lot of, I don't think.
Yeah, it didn't feel...
There's a little bit, because as I said, Lady Bennett Bridgerton is... making moves in the bedroom.
Okay, making moves in the bedroom. Because it's funny. I watched the first episode of this season, and on the one hand, it reminds you of why people love the show. It's just a fun place to be, Bridgerton. It definitely is aware of its own kind of madness, if you like the whole concoction of this world with kind of modern songs on the soundtrack and people behaving in a ridiculous way and. Etc. You could kind of critique it for being ridiculously over the top, and etc. But it is fun at the same time. And I think the fun factor is there in that first episode I watched. But it seemed less obsessed with the sex element, which was one of the very famous things when it first started. We were like, oh, this is like got a lot of shagging going on, almost in a kind of heated rivalry way. People were like, oh, you know, it gets right down to it.
It's
quite
definitely
quickly.
Less than. The first series, first or second. Right. But there is sex in it. It's just not as...
There's lots of yearning. I think it could be faster. I think the pace could go a faster pace and it could learn something from Heated Rivalry. And there's only so much constant yearning without
more
getting
hockey.
Down to it you could take. Much more hockey they should bring in, definitely. I'd like to see the hockey-based version of this show. But I do think Heated Rivalry will have an impact on this kind of show because it's of shows which depend on extending the time before a romance is fulfilled, so to speak, week by week by week. Because in Heated Rivalry, the great thing is they get down to it very quickly within the first 10, 20 minutes of the show.
But maybe a change of pace is a good thing.
Yeah,
you know?
Maybe.
You don't want to... You know, wham, bam, thank you, man.
No, okay, maybe.
Every
anyway,
series, but, yeah.
I enjoyed it, but yeah, again, it's one of those shows. It feels less like must-see viewing than it did to start with. But maybe that's inevitable.
What about you, James?
Didn't watch it. Anyway, let's wrap up this week's show.
That has been locked and loaded in my brain, right?
Okay.
Next time I can't watch something because of a screener issue and he gives me shit. We'll revisit this.
Okay.
Sure, Mr. Dyer?
What else is out this week, Boydie?
What else is out this week?
Well... The last thing he told me about this week, we can't talk about that.
Oh, yeah, we can't talk about that.
We should
that.
Talk about, whatever is it, 56
Isn't
Days.
Isn't Ask and an Answer again, Boyd?
Yeah. 56 Days is on Prime. We're going to be talking about that on Pilot Plus. That drops on Wednesday.
Correct.
The Lady You're About to Say comes to ITV on Sunday.
Let him talk.
I'm not doing it.
No, I'm happy
I'm
for
just rattling
it.
Through.
No, I like it. No, this is great, yeah.
Go on.
The Lady with Mia McKenna-Bruce, which is the story of the woman who worked for Ferguson.
Sarah Ferguson.
Now,
not Alex.
Kind of disgraced Sarah Ferguson.
She's still called Sarah Ferguson.
I'm just thinking about this. She's one-time Duchess of York, of course.
Mm-hmm.
So the woman who worked for her ends up being a killer. And that is the intriguing story with Mia McKenna-Bruce as the woman in that, yes. And so hopefully we'll read that next time. The Rookie new series, does anyone care? Sky Witness now on Tuesday the 17th. I mean, I don't know how many series there have been of that.
A lot. I think it's like seven. Very popular with Gen Z, apparently.
Oh, there you go.
What is our pick of the week?
the Walsh sisters.
Yes, absolutely, no question. Everyone should watch it.
Hard to disagree. Hard to disagree. Right, that is it for this week's show. If you enjoyed it, please do leave us a review. I hope you've enjoyed the exciting new logo that we have. If you're watching YouTube, isn't it glorious?
ZFG, honestly.
And obviously, we're on social media at various places.
Cool. Succinct.
Yeah. Good. Yeah. Give it to the point. We'll be back next week with, as we've said, Jennifer Garner. What else is out next week? Paradise returns for season 2. That's very, very exciting. Scrubs is coming back.
Ooh,
that show starts next week as well. Monarch Legacy of Monsters comes back to Apple.
Absolutely not.
Okay. Very excited. Vanished comes to Prime. So there's quite a few things for us to pick
Dirty
from.
Business on Channel 4.
Yeah.
Oh, yes. I'm excited about that. That's the one about the pollution, the water company polluting the rivers.
Yes, indeed.
Yes, indeed.
Vanished, did you say that?
I did.
Prime Video. Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay, good.
Fantastic. Well, in this week where we have dubbed the Walsh sisters our pick of the week, I look forward to receiving a lovely bouquet of flowers for Marion Keyes. Pilot out.